And now here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Hey, they say there's 7 or 8 or 9 terrorists loose in the country, but don't worry. George Bush probably invented the whole thing. They're probably CIA agents who put on fake beards and mustaches and got photographed, and it's been a disinformation campaign by the CIA to convince us that there is such a thing as Al-Qaeda and that they're really not going to hit us. Although if they do hit us, it'll be because George Bush needs a terrorist attack to get himself reelected. Hi, everybody. It's Phil Hendry with another day in the news. It's another day wallowing in the news. Just remember, it's all Bush's fault. That's the Boy Scouts marching song. Meanwhile, today, former Vice President Al Gore ripped into Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, George Tenet. They're all just human scum. They're nothing more than walking butt logs, all three of them. He said they're the ones, and let me quote, because it apparently was a very stirring speech that he gave at New York University. Apparently, his voice reached a pitch that would make Howard Dean sound like freaking James Earl Jones.
He was way up there, and he said, "How dare they?"
He said, "How dare they subject us to such dishonor and disgrace? How dare they drag the good name of the United States of America to the mud?" Oh, God. God, are we in trouble. Hi, folks. This is Phil Hendry, a Democrat, speaking on behalf of the Democratic National Committee. What in hell? How come we got to keep repeating the same stuff over and 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 over again? How come it's got to just keep being drilled into the thick skulls of some people? Is Gore kidding? No, he's not, because I guess he recognizes the attention span of the American people is somewhere on the level of a 4-year-old's. So when he says, "How dare they," he conveniently forgets that we Democrats, Gore, Kerry, Albright, Clinton, Daschle, everybody thought the guy had weapons of mass destruction. But this is selling, folks. The American people seem to be buying it. They seem to be buying that it was all an invention of George Bush's. In fact, there are intelligent people. I'm not kidding you. If you think I'm joking about this, there are intelligent people that I know who look at you kind of funny when you say to them, "Wait a second, 9/11 wasn't a conspiracy invented by George Bush. This was an attack by Al-Qaeda, a very real entity. Sometimes life can be seen direct on." They look at you like, do you really believe that? I mean, this is where we are now, man. I mean, real functioning human beings living in America are now giving credence to the possibility that it was all created by George Bush. So don't think for a minute. In other words, it's the same. It's like giving credence to the theory, "Well, I don't know. Do you think we really landed on the moon? Do you really think there was a Holocaust, really? I don't know. I'm beginning to rethink that whole thing. I think the Jews made it all up." Oh, you mean somebody's already said that? All right, let me come up with another one then. Because if you don't think 9/11 was caused by simply a terrorist organization that wishes nothing but ill for the United States of America because of our past, quote, crimes, end quote, then you also are ready to believe that there was no Holocaust. Plain and simple. Which, frankly, if you're willing to believe that 9/11 was engineered by George Bush, you're probably willing to believe that 9/11 was engineered by the Jewish conspiracy, the international conspiracy, so you probably do believe that there was no Holocaust. That's a logical succession of thought. "I'm calling today," said Gore, "for the Republicans as well as Democrats to join me in asking for the immediate resignation of those immediately below George Bush and Dick Cheney who are most responsible for creating the catastrophe we face today." Now, the Republican National Committee, not to be outdone, shot back that during the presidency of President Clinton and the vice presidency of Al Gore, the U.S. embassies in Africa were bombed, the coal was bombed, and there was a bombing of the 1993 World Trade Center. And of course, I've pointed that out before, but that gets just lost in the, it gets lost in the overall screeching of the screeching indignation that people have today over this whole manipulated and totally manufactured Al-Qaeda thing, man. Look, there they are right now. There's 7 of these so-called terrorists. One of them looks like Pelton. Are you working for the CIA, Pelton?
Part-time.
Part-time? Well, your picture was just on TV, man, so I guess you have to give up that career. I didn't know you were black. Anyway, The whole thing's created and manufactured by George Bush. Don't worry about it, folks. It's okay. You don't have to do anything about Al-Qaeda. They're really not that bad. The kid's head that got sawed off there in Saudi, or where was it, Iraq? Oh, where does it matter? It was all done by the CIA. There's no real bad people out there. There's only bad American presidents. And those are easy to deal with because you can say anything you want about an American president and you can go tuck yourself in a bed at night and sleep the sleep of children. And we can all beat our chests like, you know, former vice president today beating his chest and screeching at the top of his lungs like a gelded sheep about how Bush this and Bush that and Rumsfeld that and Condoleezza Rice something else, right? See, that's easy to do. Then you can go back to the restaurant, have yourself another steak and a martini, and go make another speech. But if you actually believe there is such a thing as Al-Qaeda that has as its intent nothing more grand than making our lives as miserable as possible, and they really don't have any political agenda beyond that, no philosophical agenda beyond that, well, then you have to engage them. You have to fight them. And to fight people that would willingly saw your head off while you're alive and screaming, that's a daunting task. That's scary. Those people are scary. And who's got the balls for that? Anybody want to raise their hands? Oh, okay. It's easier just to start screeching about Condoleezza Rice and all the rest of these guys.
Yeah, but there's no Al-Qaeda connection with Iraq.
Yeah, there wasn't any connection between Tojo and Hitler either, was there? Just so happened, when the shooting finally started, we were just all in one big fat shooting war with all of them, weren't we? I'm telling you to say that there's no connection between terrorists that were operating at the behest of Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda is like saying there wasn't any real sense in going to war with Germany. Our enemy was Japan. Anybody want to buy that one? You do? Well, guess what? No Jews were killed in World War II either. How many different ways can you put it with people before they wake up? You want to know what the answer to that is? There's not enough ways. The answer to the question is there's not enough ways. We're just going to believe what we want to believe. And what people want to believe is what's going to make them feel good. And it don't make people feel good knowing that they've got to go toe-to-toe with guys that take a freaking hacksaw to your head just because they don't like your looks. And don't think it's anything more than that, folks. Don't give me this stuff about American troops were stationed in Arabia, and so therefore they felt that their sacred land was this and that and something else. No, 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 no. These guys are a band of psychopaths, and they get their kicks, man, the same way the Manson clan did. And they put it under the aegis of some goofy religious philosophy having to do with seven virgins and a bag of grapes. These cats are nothing more than Helter Skelter, man, international style, okay? We're looking at Chucky Manson there with a beard and a funny-looking hat. We're looking at Chucky Manson wrapping a towel. That's all you got, man. It's no difference. We're going to keep on with this stupid song and a dance about how, maybe Bush engineered the whole... After all, his family's in the oil business. I talked to a guy this past weekend. I don't want to mention any names. You wouldn't know who he was anyway. This guy says to me, and in 1948, a young World War II veteran went to Saudi Arabia, and guess what he was doing there? He was there to drill oil. His name was George Herbert Walker Bush. Now, and I'm going, yeah, so what? These cats, they whisper this stuff, man, like it's a major scandal. Yeah, Bush was in the oil business. Just so happens, being in the oil business has got you in the crosshairs these days. Getting into the oil business was a very profitable thing and still is for a lot of Americans. You know the Texas oil man? You know that archetype that we have here in this country? It's a very profitable thing. A lot of guys in the oil business. Some guys in American oil, some people in foreign oil. It doesn't necessarily follow that in order to protect their oil interests, they decided to turn a blind eye to Al-Qaeda's activity in Saudi Arabia. You see, if they engaged Al-Qaeda, why then that would destabilize the Saudi royal family. Now, the Saudi royal family, even though they had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda, they are Arabians. Why didn't we attack Saudi Arabia? That's the other good one. Why didn't we attack Saudi Arabia? That's where Al-Qaeda was. Oh, okay, so you would have been in favor of that, huh? You realize that's where we get most of our oil. Well, so what? So what? All right. Here's the way to put it. I tell you what. There's a guy that lives on top of the Hoover Dam, man, that, you know, beat up your grandma, okay? Let's just go blow the Hoover Dam up, okay? We can all drown and die of thirst. There's an old saying, sports fans, you don't crap where you eat. What you need to do is you got to deal with some of these things in a diplomatic way. If it was up to me, I'd attack Saudi Arabia, sure. Now, what does that do to the oil pipeline to America? We need oil. You can tell yourself that you don't, and you can tell yourself that you drive a Toyota, and you can tell yourself that you'd be happy to walk to work and eat vegetables out of a garden that you grew. Yeah, right. Look it, man. I realize your parents were hippies, okay, but let's keep our feet planted somewhere near the planet Earth. Just because mommy and daddy named you Sunshine don't mean you got to buy into all of that commune crap, okay? Nobody's going to be walking to work with a big fat smile on their face, eating carrots out of the garden where Bugs Bunny's got a little house there with a little sign that says Bugs is in. Ain't going to happen. You cut the oil off to this country, the country dies. That's all there is to it. It dies. So we got to keep it flowing. How do you do that? You got to keep some people in business and other people's not. Maybe one of these days we'll go after the Saudis. But the fact of the matter is, it's like attacking America because a group of militia guys went over to Germany and blew up a synagogue, okay? Well, you know, those militia guys, especially the Aryan Nations, all those cats live out there in the middle of America. Why not just attack America? Okay, I'm all done. Now, coming up on our show, entertaining stuff, we will have Herb Sewell. He is a very unusual guy giving a series of commencement addresses at universities this week. He has a message for our young college graduates. Don't let failure deter you. Things are always going to go wrong. For instance, in his life, he didn't let deter him the fact that he was a, quote, enthusiastic child molester, end quote, for many years. He was able to get over that problem and move on with his life, like it's a cigarette addiction or something. Also, we're going to have Andrew Chase, the theory of Canada and its real role in the United States. I think you're going to find it fascinating, or at least you'll find it moderately amusing. 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Just a few minutes, we will have Michael Moore on the line with us, the controversial documentarian, to talk about other things that have been in the news. It's going to be very difficult for me not to engage him on some of the more controversial aspects of his work, but he is going to be with us to talk about another major news announcement that was made today. And one that may be the subject of another film that he's making. Michael Moore, the documentarian, our guest here on the Phil Hendry Show exclusively and live via the telephone in just a few minutes. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. World famous Phil Hendry Show. How many more calls am I going to take about there's still no proof Al-Qaeda's in Iraq pre-9/11? How many more times do I have to explain to people? I've laid out the explanation to this so many different things. I just said it. Now I got a guy here in where? Charlottesville?
Charlottesville.
No proof that Al-Qaeda's in her. Hey, let me tell you. What's this guy? What's your name? Bill?
Yeah.
Bill.
Yeah.
Was there a difference between Tojo and Hitler?
Phil, I'm sorry.
Was there a difference between Tojo and Hitler?
I didn't understand. If you said it, that made it true.
Was there a difference between Tojo and Hitler? You're going to answer this question or I'm getting rid of you. Was there a difference between Tojo and Hitler?
Yes.
Really? What was that?
Two different countries and two different situations. And to extrapolate all these other circumstances.
So we should never have been at war with Germany. We should never have been at war with Germany.
You're a chicken.
I'm the only guy in favor of this war. I'm the only guy who thinks we should engage them. You're the guy who would rather criticize a president than take on guys that saw a man's head off while he's alive.
You're
Who's the people like you? It's typical of people like you. So we shouldn't have been at war with Hitler. I asked him the question. Can't answer it. You got the guts to answer that question. You come on my show. I'm getting sick and tired of answering the question. There's no proof that Al-Qaeda was in Iraq pre-9/11. We aren't talking about a simple situation where you pea-brained baby boomers out there get your T's crossed and your I's dotted and you get a signed note and a permission slip, and then finally and only then do you realize that maybe, if you're in a good mood, you'll do something about a problem. In 50 years' time, ladies and gentlemen, when I'm going to be dead and buried, it's too bad because I'd love to be around for it. In 50 years' time, when the historians look back at this period, never mind all the other mistakes this guy is making as a president, and he's made a bunch. Believe you me. I talked about him the other night. In 50 years' time, George Bush will be seen as a visionary president when it came to the situation in the Middle East and international terrorism. Go ahead and laugh. It doesn't make any difference to me. I've used the example before. I could use the Lincoln example. They thought he was a dumb hick. A stupid, inept, incapable individual. Today, what is he? He's the greatest president we ever had? Try telling those clowns that in 1860. They'd laugh you right out of the stagecoach, man. They'd laugh you right through the swinging doors of the saloon. I asked the guy, I said it, and I repeated it to this guy, and I'll repeat it to anybody else listening. To think that there's some essential difference between Tojo and Adolf Hitler in the context of what we were facing in 1940, if you believe that, truly, truly believe there was a difference between the two, then, brother, you have got the right country, man. You are living in the right place. You're living with the right generation of Americans who really believe you get all the information by simply looking at the side of the box, and it lists it all right there. And if it doesn't, then it must be the FDA or the FCC or the FBI. It's got to be somebody in Washington. It couldn't possibly be the fact that you're too stupid to see it. About 1943 or 44, you go ahead and you ask the average citizen of this world, well, now, why are we at war with the Germans? They didn't attack us. Quite frankly, we should be at war with the Japanese. They attacked us. Now, yes, of course, Germany did declare war on us, but they only declared war on us because we provoked them by virtue of the fact that we were trying to aid the British with the Lend-Lease program. Now then, as further proof, the Japanese, the ones that death-marched all of our guys in Bataan, and, of course, they bombed Pearl Harbor. But then, of course, we shouldn't have dropped the atomic bomb on them, so we had no right to do that. That was a human tragedy when we tried to end the war with Japan by dropping it. Now, Germany, on the other hand, we have no quarrel with Germany. Sure, they were butchering up men, women, and children, and hanging children after giving them morphine injections, and putting people into ovens and things like that. Just nasty stuff. But what's that got to do with us? What's that got to do with us, man? They didn't attack us. They never attacked us. Germany never attacked us, and you can't prove. You got to show me proof that the Japanese are the same entity. In fact, you got to show me proof that there were Japanese in Germany. Show me some Japanese troops that were in Germany. Show me that they had, show me some kind of a indication, an inkling that there was a, you know, a connection between the two on that level. And if you do, I will send to your home, free of charge, an entire case of Phil Hendry 2003 CDs, free of charge, all right? But you will have to send me $1,000 certified check, okay? Now, that offer, again, prove to me that there were no Japanese in Germany, I'll send you, or prove to me that there were, it doesn't matter. Either way, I'll send you a free case of Phil Hendry CDs, but you must send me $1,000 certified check. Make it two. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
I don't know where. Hold on for a minute. What is that? Is that music? Turn that off. Or do we have... Oh, we got... There he is, right there. Michael Moore joins us, and Michael is... If I've caught you in the middle of dinner, Michael, I apologize.
No, just trying. Let me set our movie a little bit. That's all.
Michael, you're working on a film, and the movie 9/11, Fahrenheit 9/11, the temperature which freedom burns is what it's called, is going to be very controversial. I know you got a standing ovation. I don't want to talk about that because obviously I have serious disagreements with you.
Well, you have serious disagreements with me.
If I'm interrupting you...
No, I just wanted to ask you some dessert. You say that you have serious disagreements with me. It's because you know what you're talking about, you know.
If I could ask you something, and I don't mean to...
Go ahead.
When you're talking, could you swallow what you have in your mouth before you...
Yes, sir. I said that when you're talking with me about 9/11, you need to have your fast train. You want me to have my fast train, thank you. You want me to have my fast train. Jesus, this is great. This is a peach cobbler film. And so what I'm trying to say is that of all of the things...
What?
No, nothing. They have a delicious peach, baked peach pie. Thank you very much. No, the film, I want to talk about my new film.
All right, I want to talk about the new film with you. This is a film that you say has been a long time in the making. You finally got the green light today. Tell me what it's about.
Well, the movie is an exciting... We just heard the news today. We're going to make a movie about it. Krispy Kreme is launching a low-sugar donut. Now,
Krispy Kreme's... is launching it.
What are you laughing at?
I'm not laughing at anything, really.
No, really, you isn't.
I'm not laughing at anything, man.
Well, you're laughing at something. I heard something. You're laughing. Do you think it's funny? Because, so here's a bit the fact of. And yes, I do enjoy a meal. I enjoy a meal. Problem with that?
No, sir, I have no problem with you enjoying a meal. But what I'm saying is...
No, I can hear you laughing. I am looking into the fact that Krispy Kreme... which created in me the state, the physical state that I have, could have lost a low-sugar donut as early as 1993. But it didn't do that wrong. Because they decided that the poor, healthy birds of people were something they didn't care about.
Again, Mr. Moore, could you please swallow what you're eating?
You know, you have an awful lot of demands on me, Mr. Henry, and I find them to be dictatorial, totalitarian.
I'm simply asking you to swallow what you're eating before you answer the question. Now, you are saying that Krispy Kreme contributed to the poor health of the American people because they could have come out with a low-sugar donut as early as 1993. Are you also saying that they're responsible for your own personal poor health?
No question. Because number one... Thank you very much. Thank you. Oh, God, look at this. When's the last time you had a banana split, Phil?
I'm sorry?
When's the last time you had a banana split?
The last time I had a banana split? I had a banana split with my kids, I guess, last summer.
God damn it, a banana split here. I'm in a place called Denver's, and it's one of the best diners here in the Philadelphia area. It's really good. Hello?
Yeah, I know. I can't understand what you're saying.
I just got a mouthful. I just had a mouthful of banana. I'm sorry, I just took a mouthful of banana. I had cream and banana in my mouth. I had a banana in my mouth. I'm sorry.
Okay. So the Krispy Kreme donut that could have been low sugar didn't come out, and therefore you're a fat pig. Is that it?
Absolutely. And that's why the American leaders don't know what's going on. George Bush has created an environment in which companies such as Krispy Kreme, it's not worth their while if about a low sugar donut. Blah, 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 blah. Hold on for a minute. I had some cream cheese and shoved in my throat. I needed to. I hold on to it the way a cow does his cunt, and you know, I'll just.
I'm sorry. You do what? You hold on to cream cheese for a while?
Yes, just in my throat in case I need it.
Uh huh.
Could I get. Hold on. Can I get a whipped cream with. A milkshake with whipped cream and a cherry on top? Could you do that for me? Oh, boy. Would you really would?
Yeah, Jesus.
I'll leave it. You know, I'm Michael Moore. Excuse me. Come here for a minute.
Michael, if you need to be...
No. This won't take a minute. I'm Michael Moore. Who are you? You're a cook. You're a chef. You're a bum. you go get me a milkshake with a cherry on top with whipped cream now! Man, this is a really good
thing. I'm sorry?
I did a really good thing.
All right, anyway,
What, you're going to blow me off now?
I can't understand a word you're saying, dude. What's the point of me going on with this interview?
I've got some cheese in my pants pocket. Let me just...
What, are you hungry, man? You're at a diner.
So in other words, you're the only one that's allowed to eat, is that it?
No, I'm not the only one allowed to eat. When do you stop eating? I can't even have you stop eating long enough so I can do an interview with you and understand what you're saying. What do you mean you save cream cheese in your throat the way a cow does his cud? Good God!
I keep a slice of American cheese in my pocket. Oh, excuse me, Der Fuhrer. What? What do you mean you don't have whipped cream?
Look at Mr. Moore, I'm going to go now. You're engaged with a,
Oh, it's just some waiter. You go get whipped cream. You go down the street to get the whipped cream. I don't give a sweet good guy. Can I get 3 dozen Bavarian creams to go to?
All right, I can't, you know, look at your film exposing Krispy Kreme as some capitalist swine corporation because they could have come out with a low-sugar donut, but they didn't because George Bush created an environment in which they wanted to make lots of money and they didn't care about the health of the American people will be coming out soon. Can you tell me which theater it'll be in?
Well, hold on, look, I found Phil, I found some gummy bears in my chin fold, yeah. Did you know that? No, I didn't know that.
Who are you talking to?
Oh, just a friend of mine, my lover, my gay lover. Yeah.
Ooh, God.
What?
You found gummy bears in your chin fold?
Oh, get you. Aren't you just so judgmental? Where's the dessert menu?
Okay, I gotta go, man. Since you're so...
You're interrupting the world, so you do me. I'm gonna take the bowl. Clear! I had a defibrillator. I carry them. In any event...
Get out of here, you freak. Michael Moore, ladies and gentlemen, his latest film exposing Krispy Kreme as contributing to his obvious state of bad health. They could have come out with a low-sugar donut as early as 1993, and he'd look just like Christopher Reeve right now. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I mean when he could walk. Well, never mind. 1-800-449-8686. Hold on for me. Hi, Bobby, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Oh, hi, Phil. Was that really Michael Moore?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I thought you were doing a joke.
No, that was Michael Moore.
The filmmaker?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What? He sounds...
He sounds grotesque, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. He doesn't sound like he has a lot of self-discipline.
No, he does not.
I thought you were doing a joke. I thought you were doing a...
No, ma'am. That was Mr. Moore is... planning his new film about Krispy Kreme and their low-sugar donuts. It's a, you know, topics that I guess we all should do the work that we love, right?
I guess. You know, I just think he sounded really disgusting. I think he needs to stop eating long enough to be able to conduct an interview. But how does he make his movies if he's always eating?
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, anyway, we really love your program.
Thank you very much for your call.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Coming up, Herb Sewell is a reformed child molester. On to talk about the college commencement speeches he's going to be giving. And the theme of his college commencement speeches, don't let mistakes bring you down. Sure, you are a child molester, but move on from that. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
1-800-449-8686, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Spanish police said they told the FBI the fingerprints weren't Mayfield's. The fingerprints that they found on luggage that the Spanish police believed might be the fingerprints of individuals involved in the bombing of that Madrid train. They say they told the FBI that they were not Mayfield's. What the Spanish police did not tell you is that they didn't know anything. The Spanish police... couldn't find their rear ends with both of their hands. Like most international police agencies, they send their problems to the FBI. Now, Why is it our problem? Could it be that Al-Qaeda actually did pull off the 9/11 World Trade Center attack? I mean, I don't know. I thought it was George Bush. In any event, the FBI got a hold of the fingerprints. The Spanish police said, well, we're sure that it isn't that guy. The FBI arrested a guy in Portland, Oregon, and now he's claiming that his human rights were violated because he got arrested. Hey, Charlie, if you think your human rights were violated because you got arrested, then somebody owes me a couple of bucks because I've been popped. Yeah, it sucks, doesn't it? And maybe you weren't guilty. Hey, why don't you get in line with about billions and billions of African-American men who've been arrested without any reason whatsoever and harassed by cops through the history of this country? Why don't you get in line with about a billion Mexican-Americans who've been popped by the police without any reason whatsoever and held in detainment for a long time down to the history of this country? Why don't you get in line behind Native Americans, Asian Americans that have been busted and held in detention by American police for absolutely no reason? Since when do we care in this country about the rights of guys that are getting busted for no reason? This guy, at least, was held and released once they determined that he was innocent. At least he wasn't framed. Consider yourself lucky that you weren't framed, man. You know, cops do that. You're aware of that, right? And if the FBI and John Ashcroft and the entire police apparatus of the United States is as corrupt as everybody says it is and is as completely dismissive of human rights as everyone says they are these days, by God, they have it within their ability to frame people. They've done it before. They've done it many times. Why didn't they just frame you, man? They could throw you to the American people or at least to the Spanish people and say, here's the guy that did it. Hey, they framed O.J., didn't they? I thought that's what happened. You mean they didn't? Well, now I'm confused. You know what this entire conspiracy discussion is, don't you? When people say, well, 9/11, maybe the Jews did it, maybe George Bush did it. It is selectively piecing together information until it all comes out the way you want it to come out. That's what it is. It's, say, taking a little piece of information here, a little piece of information there, and plugging it all together until it comes out the way you want it to come out. All right? Now, on this radio show, I get frustrated because I've stated in numerous ways how Al-Qaeda is connected to Iraq. Numerous ways. But people continue to ask the same question. Now, I'll give you another example of what I'm talking about. And I said this once before. Al-Qaeda, not in Iraq? Maybe they weren't. They are now. Is anybody taking note of that? Does anybody care that they're there now? They're there now. Well, wait a minute. They're there now, and they're the guys that did the thing on 9/11. How about we just engage them now, and we can pick over the niceties of why we were there in the first place some other time? Because it's as stupid to talk that way as it is to say, you know, you told me you were going to take the bus to that guy's house to kill him. Instead, you took an airplane. Now you have no right to be at that guy's house. Why? Because I didn't go there the way you... No, you didn't. Well, he's still the killer. It doesn't matter. But I got him. I got the guy dead to rights right now. I got him. No, it doesn't matter. I don't want to talk about it. You took the wrong mode of transportation. We agreed you'd take the bus and you took an airplane. Yeah, but the guy's right here. I got him right in my crosshairs, man. I can blow him away, baby. I mean, I can deal with the situation right now, okay? And then you can arrest me. You can do whatever you want with it. Let's just get on with the dealing with this guy. No, I don't even want to talk about it. I don't even want to deal with it anymore. You lied to me. I mean, this is what's going on. And don't ever make any mistake, folks, that whether it's the Republicans or the Democrats, and they're both skilled at it, don't even begin to think that they're not making political hay out of this, and you guys are the target. You guys are the ones that are getting your brains twisted six ways to sunset, baby, on this thing. You got Gore screaming about something over here. You got Rumsfeld screaming about something over there. And the whole reason is to pollute your point of view. Pollute. You notice I didn't say give you clarity, pollute your point of view. Gore screaming about, Condoleezza Rice needs to do this, obfuscates the fact that he was one of the people that believed there were WMDs there. Al Gore ain't going to take any credit for that. Now, though, will he? Donald Rumsfeld screaming about the fact that the you know, the prison abuses are minor compared to what Al-Qaeda does each day against Americans is in and of itself an obfuscation of the fact that there is dereliction of duty on the part of soldiers and officers, and it has to be dealt with. And it is a shame, and it is a disgrace, and it's all of those wonderful things. Nonetheless, what the American troops did in that prison compared to what Hussein's goons were doing not more than 3-4 years ago, I mean, I got to laugh. I got to laugh at anybody that still wrings their hands and sheds the crocodile tears over those poor Iraqis, those poor guys having a dog bark at them. I couldn't care less, man, if they killed every last one of those guys. You want to know why? Because it's a combat zone. Therefore, the niceties of, "Hi, Officer Jones, can I cross the street now? Wait till the light turns red." All of those things are turns. Yeah, when it turns red, you can cross the street because I don't like you, kid. All of those things don't exist in a combat zone. But, this is an argument that I'm not going to have much longer with people. I'm not going to keep talking about this much longer. I only say it because, you know, I think. There's no point in me doing a radio show unless I can have some fun. And fun for me is expressing how I feel. Part of that is just talking straight about things in the news. The other part of it is doing goofy character voices and sketches and things like that, right? Otherwise, there's no point in me coming into work. And these days, this stuff is very, very important to me for a lot of reasons. And I don't know why. I take a lot of it personally. I'm an American. I love my country, and I'm not ashamed of any of that, and I'm not too hip for the room, and I'm not too cool to wave the flag, and I'm not too cool to acknowledge the fact that I'm a citizen of a larger community called America, and I'm not too stupid to understand that, frankly, I've got a life here, man, that begins and ends at the borders of this country, and I'm not just a free-floating member of the world community, man, and I'm my own free person. You know, I'm just... Look, I put down marijuana as a habitual user many, many years ago, okay? I don't take psychotropics any longer. Some of you guys might try the same thing. Let's just leave our baby boomer, let's marinate our heads in Quaalude days behind, and let's get with the program and get with the present day and look at the world straight on, man. There's people out there, they hate your guts. They want to kill you and your kids, and they don't care that you agree with the fact that George Bush is a bad guy. They don't care that you agree, that you happen to agree that we shouldn't have troops in their land. They don't give a crap. It's like asking, say to Charles Manson, "Hey, man, I really kind of get, I'm down with that whole Helter Skelter program. Would you please not stab me and write pig on the walls of my apartment? Please, sir?" All right, coming up, Herb Sewell, who's just like Manson. Wait till you hear this guy on the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
We have on the line with us Herb Sewell. He is a commencement speaker at a number of major universities this week. And we wanted to have him on because he's got a very, very different message, a very, very unusual message that he is going to be presenting to students. And Herb, thanks for joining us.
It's always a pleasure, Phil.
Herb, tell me about this presentation.
Well, I do have a unique presentation. I have been asked to be the commencement speaker at three very prominent universities here on the West Coast. They are major universities, and they are here in the state of California.
Obviously, we know which ones they are?
That is correct.
Well, I'm just curious, why are you not allowed to tell us which schools?
Because essentially I have a very unique message to deliver to the graduates, and the publicity, I could take away from the impact of my address.
Tell me about yourself and what this message is.
The message that I want to deliver to this generation of graduates that I am going to be giving is, don't be afraid to fail. Now, we must give these young people the permission to fail. And this is a philosophy that I originally expressed really in a trilogy of books that I call The Saga. The books were The Beginning, The second book was called A Prison of My Own, A Prison of My Own Making, and the most recent that I was very gratified to see was on the New York Times bestseller list, Cut Free. Now, they tell the story of my early life, and my early life was as an active and a very enthusiastic child molester. I articulate that in the books. I made mistake after mistake.
You were a child molester. You were a pedophile.
That is correct.
So the commencement address you have for the students, what will it entail that isn't in your books about this life as a child molester?
It's a good question, Phil, and one that can be answered by saying I have come a long way since those books were published, and I had my first relapse. I picked myself up.
Now wait, after you published these books about your life as a child molester, you then felt you were cured and you went back to it?
I had a relapse, yes, but I picked myself up, and this is the message that I want to give these students. I picked myself up. I, as the song says, I dusted myself off, and I started all over again. And so there is much to tell, as Lewis Carroll once wrote.
Now, you published these books about being a child molester, and then you reoffended. What happened? Had you been in jail?
Off and on. I've been in and out of both the men's colonies at Chino and San Luis Obispo. I was remanded to Atascadero, so I've done the circuit. And
all right, Mr. Simmel, you're going to give. I got to tell you, I'm troubled, obviously, by your life. You're going to give the.
But the life that you're troubled by is a life that I'm no longer troubled by because I learned from my mistakes. I picked myself up, dusted myself off. It doesn't really matter what a man has done so long as a man, and I can tell you, Phil, that I have...
Well, hold on for a minute. You're going to give the commencement at three of the most prominent schools in America this week, and you tell me you've had what I consider a tragic life. Are you saying your message is simply don't be afraid to make mistakes?
No. These are the new minds. The people I'll be talking to are the people of tomorrow, and my message is not simple. I was, for a period of 6 years, a very active, enthusiastic, and predatory pedophile. I know more about making mistakes, and when I say mistakes, I mean, you could say I was the veritable Godzilla. There is an 800-pound gorilla making mistakes.
You were a child molester.
That is correct. That is correct.
I mean, you hurt...
But at the end of that period, I wrote the trilogy. I relapsed into more criminal behavior. Finally, at the end of my wits, I had myself chemically castrated. So you ask me, what is my message? It's a question that I don't think needs asking. I made mistakes. I learned from it. I figured out there are better ways to go about things.
All right, I'm going to give our number out, and I want to ask you the big question I'm sure you've been asked. Are you regretful or remorseful for what you've done? Our number is 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. Herb Sewell with us. You called yourself an active and enthusiastic pedophile.
That is correct, yes.
What about remorse?
Well, I felt remorse, but let's keep this in mind. I was incarcerated in a prison for the criminally insane. I've been chemically castrated. I did receive electroshock. I was a candidate, and I was recommended as a candidate by no less a personage than Dr. William Hunt for a full lobotomy. All this happened. Yes, okay, it happened. But I have moved forward. I made my mistakes. Society then had, you know, it's fun with me. I can tell you they had their fun with me.
What do you mean society had their fun with you? You molested children.
I was in a prison for the criminally insane, electroshock, a possible lobotomy, chemical castration. Society, they really got the jollies.
But when you say that the message is don't be afraid to make mistakes, what you did, these are not just simple mistakes. It seems when you're talking, and you're speaking to graduates at universities, and...
Phil, let me tell you that a man who, at the time, I didn't like him very much. He was a chaplain in the isolation block at Atascadero. He said that sin is sin. There are no greater or lesser sins. They're all the same in God's eyes. So I've made mistakes, just like everyone else does. I've paid the price on moving forward. Everyone falls short of pure goodness. Everyone falls short of the glory of God. And so, to say, because I, as you say, molested children, yes, I did. I also was chemically castrated. I endured beatings, isolation,
What's it like for you, not to interrupt you, to be chemically castrated?
Phil, I've lived through a lot. I mean, I've been the victim of jail rape. I've had countless beatings, months at a time in isolation cells. I've had a lot of time to think. And I sum it up in the final chapter of my book. The chapter is called, almost whimsically, Who Needs It? You know, who needs this? You know, who needs to be beaten and castrated like that? But, I've gotten involved with a group in prison, regrettably, of white supremacists. And one day, this black trustee had brought me breakfast while I was in the isolation block, and I called him a word. You know, I don't want to say which one it is.
Please don't.
Okay, but I called him a rather nasty word. And he used his fists, the tray, everything he could get his hands on, and he beat me pretty thoroughly. And, of course, I didn't know at the time that the man who had just beaten me was Preston Garner, who was a very famous murderous arsonist. And I considered myself lucky to have survived that, and that got me to thinking, maybe I need to take another look at my life.
Wait a minute, you got to take another look at your life. You're molesting kids, you're in a prison for the criminally insane, you're in a white supremacist organization, and on top of everything else, you say you've endured jail rape, electroshock, possible lobotomy. Why wouldn't you take another look at your life? And when you give the commencement, by the way, and I want my audience to know this, you have at the ready 3 or 4 bodyguards, is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Why?
Unfortunately, because of my past encounters as a child molester, I have, shall we say, accumulated a certain amount of malice from certain parents. And they don't realize they've already paid my debt, and they can't let it go, and they want to do some level of physical harm to me. And of course, I can't let that happen. I have so much to do to finish before I leave this earth, and it is work that I want to do.
So when you are giving the commencement this week at a variety of universities, you'll be there with 3 or 4 bodyguards, because it is possible some of the parents of the children that you harmed may be there and will want to hurt you.
That is what I'm led to believe, yes. And I can't let that happen. And plus, these parents who wish to do me harm.
Can you understand that they'd want to hurt you?
I'm a man who has been put through the ringer. I've had a tough go. My message to these students, my message to the students is important. It will have a far more powerful effect coming from me, a former, quote, child molester, end quote, than someone who is simply basing their speech on their education. I'm going to make most commencement speakers that have been at these schools look like they're giving some boring address at a car parts convention, because what I've been through. And
no, but that doesn't answer my question. Do you understand why some parents would want to hurt you? You have 3 or 4 bodyguards.
I have 3 or 4 bodyguards. Yes.
Because you've received threats.
Yes, I have.
Do you consider those people who have threatened you to be emotionally unsound?
Absolutely. Why would you want to go and hurt someone who has paid his debt? I've paid my debt to society. You know, I've not, there isn't a thing that jail has to offer that I have not, on some level, experienced. And,
all right, well, you mentioned jail rape, a lot of these things. They're all very, very brutal. You say, though, and I'm using your words from your book, 6 years as an active and enthusiastic pedophile. And
I was very enthusiastic. I enjoyed what I did when I did it. I've moved on. You don't make the same mistake twice, and you have got a pretty good handle, I think, on how life should go. And that's the message that I'm going to try to give to these students. And I will have the bodyguards there. And regretfully, the parents that want to harm me, they're not going to touch me. I can't let that happen. I've got too much important work to do. I find so many of these parents need to continue to be angry. I cannot stop that. It's out of my power, but it's in my power to protect myself from these parents and say that they will not harm me. I have much work to do before I leave this earth. and for them to think that they can harm me, I think is ludicrous.
All right. Hold on. Herb Sewell is his name. You just heard him with your own ears. He is a, quote, former enthusiastic pedophile, end quote. He spent time at Atascadero, Chino, San Luis Obispo. He has been subjected to electroshock, chemical castration. His message, his commencement speech to university seniors will be, don't let mistakes hold you back. And he says that he has to travel everywhere with three or four bodyguards because there are enough parents out there that want to do him harm that he needs the bodyguards, but they won't stop him. He won't be deterred from the work he has to do. I think I'm talking to a guy that sounds moderately unstable. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry, drug addict. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
I want to know, and I have Herb Sewell on with me. Mr. Sewell spent time in maximum security prisons and also in a hospital for the criminally insane. I don't know if they call it that anymore. What do they call Atascadero now? Do you know?
I will tell you this, Phil. I didn't stop to look at the sign on the on the front of the hospital when the halfway house coach from the halfway house came to pick me up. I did not look back at that institution at all. So I will tell you, however, that Atascadero has done a great deal of good for a great many people, such as myself. and I say that even after having been almost beaten to death in the isolation block by this Mr. Garner. But I want to get back to the question that you had about my qualification to be a...
Can I interrupt you for a minute?
Certainly.
Mr. Sewell, there is something very, very creepy about you, sir. I'm sorry.
I've had that effect on people.
No, but I'm not hearing a man who sounds repentant for the horror that he has visited on people.
Well, Mr. Henry, let me explain. A child molester, and I was that, is the distant cousin to the commencement speaker.
Now, wait a minute.
Now, but please let me finish, because...
A child molester damages... horrifically a child. A commencement speaker tries to send a young person off into the world with some sort of inspiration.
Please allow me, sir, the courtesy that I've allowed you. A child molester, which, yes, I was. You know, it was funny because I hit on this when I was writing my third book, Cut Free, that was anticipating my eventual chemical castration. And I said in the book, that while I was doing some early work with children...
You were horribly damaging children.
If you will. It mutated into a talent for speaking to young people, which is what I'm going to be doing. Now, I want to also mention one thing here.
I got a phone call I want to get to. 1-800-449-8686.
Can I just mention Sally Poirier, please, for just a moment?
Go ahead.
Her name is Sally Poirier. She is the mother of a boy that I had an unfortunate encounter with, shall we say. And she said at my trial that she wanted to kill me.
What is so funny about that, man?
I'm sorry?
What is funny about that?
I don't find anything funny about that.
Well, you're going, ha, ha, ha. You're laughing about this.
No, sir. It's I find it ironic. She, this poor lady has stated publicly she wants to kill me. And, of course, I can't let her do that. I will hurt her before she hurts me. And I don't want to hurt her. I wanted to just mention the name publicly because if she comes near me, I will hurt her. And I don't want to, based upon the fact that I am trying to turn over this new leaf, if you will.
1-800-449-8686. Here is Bob. Bob, go ahead. You're on the line here with Phil Hendry and Herb Sewell.
Yeah, Herb, you believe because you spent time in prison, you served your debt to society, but...
Well, that's what we're told
remains,
anyway.
No, no, the fact remains that the debt you owe these the parents of these people you molested could never be repaid, and that's why they want to kill you. You can't understand that.
Well, wait,
but
I
you served time in prison, so you're good. You're squared your debt. But that's only with society, not with the parents of these people.
Well, when you say only with society, not with the parents, I'm not sure you're even clear on what it is you just said. What do you mean by that? I've caused many of these children problems, no doubt, but I have rehabilitated and I've learned to channel my energy into something helpful for these students, which is to be a commencement speaker. Now, Sally Porter has stated publicly that she wants to kill me in like a cop. I'm sorry?
Psychologists say child molesters are never rehabilitated, first of all.
Well, they may be right.
Exactly right. It's a sickness that can never be cured.
What about that,
society says that's how you pay your debt. But if you have a child of your own, when someone, a monster...
Well, I would never have a child of my own, no.
If a monster, then you can't possibly understand how a monster like yourself can cause so much damage, how a parent of that child would want to kill you in a heartbeat.
Mr. Sewell,
and sitting in jail does not eradicate that problem.
Can you comment on that, please?
You want me to comment on what he just said? I can't disagree with anything that he said. I am a monster. That I know I am a monster. I know that.
Are you rehabilitated?
But I know that if Sally Porvy or any of these parents that have threatened me came near me, I would have to hurt them before they hurt me. Now, I don't want that to happen. I do travel with bodyguards, and I do have a story to tell. Understand, if you were on the isolation ward that I was on with some of the most bona fide psychopaths this world has ever seen, I was beaten within an inch of my life by one of them with a food tray.
What is this a nervous laugh of yours, sir?
I'm sorry?
Is that a nervous laugh of yours?
You
have a nervous laugh when you mention something particularly odious.
I suppose it is, yes. But you have to understand again. Chemical castration, shock therapy. I'm almost proud of this, by the way, Bob, when I list these to people. I've been chemically castrated. I've had shock therapy. I've been engaged by psychopaths. I was a member of a white supremacist group. What more can you do to me? What more can society do to me? Do you understand what I'm saying, sir?
It doesn't mean that you're good at the problem.
Okay, Bob, thank you for your call. 1-800-449-8686, Herb Sewell. He used to be a child molester. Now he's giving commencement speeches at universities. 1-800-449-8686.
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. FUBAR. Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Herb Sewell is my guest. Mr. Sewell spent 10 years behind bars at some of the tighter security prisons in the state of California. His crime, he was a criminal pedophile, a child molester. Mr. Sewell volunteered for chemical castration. He has your own admission, Mr. Sewell. You've had electroshock.
If I could interrupt, I was going over my mind the things that I have done to try and make these amends to society that everybody says I should. But as I mentioned, I was beaten by Preston Garner. Mr. Garner was a homicidal arsonist. I don't know if you're familiar with his crimes.
No, sir, I am not.
Mr. Garner burned to the ground summer beach home in the Newport Beach Laguna Beach area after he cemented the doors closed with a family of six people inside, and he did it for no other reason than he said he needed a little entertainment.
And all right, so he's a sick, twisted freak who beat you up in prison.
Beat me up. He beat me within an inch of my life. I've been stabbed in racial gang fights. I got stabbed 15 times in a gang fight at Terminal Island, the yard at Terminal Island. What more can you do to me? Now, I do know that Richter Hauser, Sally Porvy, Manuel and Rosalie Escobar...
Who are these people?
These are the parents of the some of the young clients that I had. And
when you say a client...
I mean the children that I harmed, yes.
Well, what does it mean, your clients?
Look, here is the three things...
What do you mean, your clients, sir?
That was a phrase that I used to use back in my other life, as I call it. But I want to say, and these are the three things that I say to my commencement speech. There are three things I say to my students. Don't be afraid of making a mistake. If you make a mistake, like I did, try to smile. And my motto...
When you make a mistake like I did, smile. Molesting kids.
Well, Phil, you asked me what I'm going to say at my...
Go ahead.
All right. And my motto has always been, a man who makes a mistake is a man who can come back after a horrid incarceration and rehabilitation and look at a child and a parent and say, you're lucky I'm healed. Now, I do want to say...
That sounds like a threat.
No, I'm not. I'm the one that's being threatened. I'm the one that travels with bodyguards. Frida Bulba, James Dunshaw, Christopher Welke.
Now, these are the names of parents who have said that they did not want you released, and you are naming them over the air. For what reason, sir?
Because these are people that have threatened me.
Have these people threatened your life?
They have most certainly threatened my life. They've promised all kinds of terrible things, and I want to say to them, there's an old saying, I did the crime, I did the time. So, if I can be healed, I'd like to release you so that you can be healed. You know, and...
That laugh you got to lose, man.
Well,
I'm telling you right now, Mr. Sewell, if you're going to be successful as a commencement speaker, you sound like some cat that just came out of the dungeon at the Addams Family with that whole ha-ha-ha thing.
You know what? You're a master communicator, Mr. Henry. I'll take that under advisement. But I
did the crime, I did the time. The whole thing that you're laying out here has the effect of one of a man who is rather cavalier. And for you to say that being a child molester is the distant cousin of a commencement speaker is beyond belief.
You have to see it from my point of view, though.
I'm trying to see it from your point of view. I'm trying to see this from your point. Are you saying you made a logical progression?
When I was in isolation at the Tascadero, okay, and believe me, they didn't take me out of isolation just because old Mr. Garner decided that he wanted to beat my face, almost disfigure my face to the point of not being able to be recognized with a food tray. They still kept me in isolation after that beating. I remember thinking that... If I did these things to children, I could become a commencement speaker. So then I got a hold of a record by Frank Sinatra called High Hopes, and it goes like this. Next time you're found with your chin on the ground, there's a lot to be learned, so look around. Now,
I know the song.
Well, hold on. Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant. Now, here's what I'm trying to say to the college students. But he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. He's got high apple pie in the sky hopes, blah, 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 yada, yada. The point being that you got to have high hopes. You know, so even though I'm unable to have sex and I have a face that has been horribly disfigured with a food tray, I sang this song every day while I was in prison. And you know something? I'm out, and... Christopher Welke, James Dunshaw.
Don't mention the names of these parents, man, okay? If they want to kill you, they want to kill you. You've got bodyguards.
Oh, they won't kill me. They won't hurt me. No, I'm not going to let it happen. No. What I don't want to have happen, Phil, and I'm saying this with all seriousness, I don't want to hurt them. I don't want to have to hurt them, and I will if they come after me. You know?
I can't stand this anymore. Goodbye, sir, and I hope that... somewhere along the line, man.
I'm here with no gear, so get used to it. That's what I used to say in prison. I'm here with no gear, so get used to it. You know. So.
Oh, Jesus. Get this guy out of here. What a freak. Just what makes that little old ant move a rubber tree plant. Can you imagine that guy on the block there in Atascadero? you know, some nut down the hall playing a harmonica. This guy singing High Hopes. Just a bunch of psychos. Herb Sewell. He'll be speaking at a university near you, I'm sure. 1-800-449-8686. Our web address is www.philhenryshow.com. We'll be right back.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Born again. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Tabs of Beverly Hills Steakhouse, come on down.
Hey everybody, this is Ted Bell reminding you to go to the Phil Henry website for some great gift ideas for Father's Day. www.philhenryshow.com. Right, Herb?
Ha 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 ha.
Here at Tabs, we want
Man.
To meet in your...
Thank you. 1-800-449-8686. Here, our website, www.philhenryshow.com. Coming up is author Andrew Chase. Sounds like an author, doesn't it? Andrew Chase. And he has a book on the espousing a theory as to why Canada has, well, you'll find out. But there, Canada isn't what it you think it is. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show. Jeez, where's my stuff? I'm completely... What happened to my 8 o'clock folder? I don't know where that went either. Okay. Oh, thanks. We got a flashback. Jay Sanis was on the show yesterday. Jay is the Citizens Auxiliary Police Brigadier Admiral, but he was on actually to talk about some problems he has with his wife. She wants to go to couple counseling. He said he'll agree to go to couple counseling with his wife if she gets breast implants. A caller was talking to Jay about this, and he seemed to have a problem saying the word breast.
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
You mind my ex-husband? It's so unrealistic because what you're doing is you're afraid of the counselor, so you're using the breast because you can't even say the name breast.
I'm going to the counselor.
You can't. No, you're not.
Yes,
you're
I am. I said that I'm going to go. I'm going to go if she gets her breasts enlarged and made bigger.
No, you're not using that as an excuse not to go to the counselor because the breast costs a lot of money, just as much as the counselor costs.
You could do one... I told her we could do one breast at a time or whatever she wants to do.
What do you mean one breast at a time?
How ridiculous that is. You're threatening her. You know that poor woman?
No, I'm not threatening her. I said...
You remind me of my ex-husband. He's, you know what? He's just like you. He wanted me to be 90 pounds, and he wanted me to, you know, do everything I needed to do to get 90 pounds. That was like take drugs, anything you can to be 90. And this woman, she wants conversation. But that's not all we want is conversation, what you think we do. And so you kind of need counseling.
Well, I think I fill the bill in other regards.
You need counseling.
Why do I need counseling? I'm willing. I'm going to go to the counselor. I'm not saying
you're looking at a magazine cover and you're looking at her boobs, but you call it a bosom because you're afraid to say breast. You're fascinated by her breast for some reason.
Well, because that word comes so easily.
Are you afraid to say it?
The word seems to come very easily to you.
No, wait. That's a very good question. Are you afraid to say it?
Are you afraid to say it? What
no,
is it?
I am
you
not
got
afraid
assassination?
No, I'm
are you
not afraid.
Scared?
No, I'm not afraid. You say your husband...
Say it.
You say your husband wanted you at 90 pounds, what, 90 pounds each? As for, how about that?
90 pounds weight.
You know, yeah, 90 pounds each one.
We got it, Jay. Why don't you say it? Say the word.
What?
Say the word.
Say the word breast.
Say breast.
You know, I'm not going to give you people your cheap kicks, okay?
Say food.
You got
say
your
anything.
Cheap thrills.
Say it.
My wife...
Just what is the surgery you want your wife to have done?
I want her to have her...
Don't say ugly old bosoms, because that sounds so gross, you know.
I want her to have her boobs.
That's wrong.
Why can't you say that word?
Mr. Henry, I have a...
Say the word, man. This may be something you need to
you
get through.
You tell me, buddy.
Say it.
I want my wife to have her boobs.
Can't say it.
Her boobs. Her...
No, man, they aren't called bazooms. What are they called?
Well, the lady thinks it's funny. I've got a mental block because the word doesn't come that easy. I don't have a filthy mind.
You don't have a filthy mind?
It's not filthy. It's not filthy.
Her bazooms. Her bazooms.
Her brosmans.
Okay, you're scared. Something's wrong,
dude.
Here,
there is something wrong, man.
Something's wrong.
Well, Mr. Henry's got me on a national radio broadcast program, and he wants me to say the word braids.
I don't know. There's something wrong.
Yeah.
Counseling is definitely needed. That poor woman.
I'm not going to some chiseler.
He's not a chiseler. You need it. You need it.
Say the word. Say the word, man.
Here's free counseling.
All
say
right.
The word.
Blouse clown.
Blouse clown. Thanks a lot, Karen. Oh, yeah, okay. Forgot your music, huh?
I'm sorry. They said that I could...
Go ahead.
Mr. Henry, all I...
Just go ahead and do the end bit. Blouse clown.
Whenever the laws of any state are broken...
I'm very sorry. I
just... Just say it.
...organization swings into action. It may be called the state police, state troopers, militia, the rangers...
Or the citizens' auxiliary police.
These are the stories of the men whose training, skill, and courage have enforced and preserved our state law.
Say it! Say the word!
Hogan.
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy Gold!
I got Jay back on the line today. That was from yesterday's show...
That's correct, yes, sir.
And you feel a little stupid now, don't you?
I feel,
We got the Teds of Beverly Hills commercial on, I'm sorry. What is that? That's your music. Okay.
I just want to say, Phil, that I feel a little stupid. I've learned how to say, the word,
breast?
No, Hogan.
You said Hogan.
Well, I can say it better now.
You can say it better. Go ahead, say it.
Hogan.
Oh, okay. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show. And Black Sabbath is getting together, man, for the first time since 2001. Wow, how time flies. Oh, British heavy metal pioneers Black Sabbath will reunite for the first time since 2001 for Ozfest, which begins July 10th. Wow, for the first time since 2001. You know, it's one thing when they get back together after they haven't seen each other for 20 years, but for the first time since 2001, I think you guys are spending way too much time together. Ozfest co-founder and headliner Ozzy Osbourne will revisit such hard-rocking classics as War Pigs and Paranoid, along with guitarist Tony Iommi, bass player Geezer Butler, but original drummer Bill Ward will be replaced by Mike Borden because Bill is too old to get out of bed now. Can you dig that? How old is he? Like 65 or something? Along with three-quarters of the original Black Sabbath, Ozfest will also feature four-fifths of the original Judas Priest, because the lead singer, what's the guy, Rob Halford?
No, Halford's back in the band.
Oh, Halford's back in the band? Now, Halford is gay, correct? And he's now out?
Sir.
Isn't he out gay?
Totally out.
Well, how come he wasn't talking about it? Because they had young male, they basically had a young male audience, and it wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, he was afraid to, man.
He was afraid because he thought it would turn off the audience. We'll also feature four-fifths of the original Judas Priest, such acts as Slayer and Superjoint Ritual. Look at that. Pantera singer Phil Anselmo and Zakk Wylde's Black Label Society. Pantera. Oh, my God. Some of those bands. Now, we're talking about the 80s, which is distinct from the 90s, or distinct from the 70s. The 80s is when metal eventually evolved from that sort of crude Led Zeppelin sound, and then that sort of sub-Zeppelin sound of Black Sabbath, and it got real slick, and it got real studio. What were called the big hair bands... Because they had all of that really androgynous, slightly effeminate makeup and hairstylings, but they strutted and preened around the stage like they were, you know, the second coming of the SS. Remember bands like Danzig? What was that guy's story? Remember Danzig?
Yeah, Glenn Danzig.
Yeah, Danzig? The guy was like a weightlifter or something. He wore leather. In other words, he looked like the bouncer at a gay leather bar. That's what that cat looked like.
He's
sorry to break the news to you, man.
Too.
Huh?
He's about 5'4".
Yeah, he's got on those leather suspenders. Look like something out of Cruisin' with Al Pacino. The whole thing is very homoerotic, which is nothing wrong with that, but please understand, if you're 15 and you dig bands like that, you're gay. Okay, now, so anyway, that's Ozfest, and won't that just be a big treat? My associate producer, Chris Pelton, is going to it. He's 32, but he still goes to it. And, of course, you know, this is not the heavy metal. It's not really the dangerous kind of concert setting that perhaps one once knew back in the day. Now it's Ozzy has to be, you know, led to bed. And then somebody goes up, well, wasn't that a lot of fun, kids? Be sure to buy your T-shirts. And everybody just kind of wanders off. Now, the show that they have out at Coachella Valley, well, I don't want to get into a bunch of music crap because nobody knows what the hell it is I'm talking about. However, speaking of Ozzy, Sharon and Ozzy have their own ice cream. It's called... It was made by some guy that wants to make a cheap buck. I mean, it's made by a guy who wanted to honor them. His name is Ed Dabrowski Jr. He owns Country Cow Creamery. Do you know that ice cream? I think I've seen it in the stores. And he sent an email in January to the Osbournes offering to design an ice cream flavor in Sharon Osbourne's honor. So, for Sharon, he designed some crap, and for Ozzy, carnivorous carrot cake. And, oh, Death by Sharon. It's a chocolate thing. So look for it, man. Look for it. Me, I'm going back to Ben and Jerry's. Because as much as I think those two slobs probably ought to be sent right off to the slaughterhouse with the hogs, man, I think their ice cream's out of sight. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Car dealers in our next life. Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Andrew Chase is a Toronto-based writer, and his book that is new, out on, right now, it has debuted at number 15 on the New York Times bestseller list. It is called National Facade, Six Decades of American Territorial Deceit. And on the line with me from Toronto is Andrew Chase. How are you, Andrew?
Phil, it's my pleasure.
This is a pretty far-out story. In essence, you're saying Canada, as a national entity, ceased to exist in 1945 and became some kind of an American territory?
Not an American territory, but an American protectorate. At the end of World War II, the Canadian national essentially ceased to exist. At Tehran and Yalta, the three main belligerents decided to divide the post-war world into spheres of influence. It had long been desired by a great many Americans to annex some of the more oil-rich and timber-rich areas of Canada. Obviously, an annexation of Canada was out of the question, but Roosevelt, who was president at the time, in discussing Britain's interests geopolitically in the post-war Palestine, which at that time was a political hot potato, asked Churchill what he was prepared to offer up if then the United States gave him a free hand in Palestine. Churchill indicated that he would be willing to guarantee oil and timber rights in the Canadian frontier.
So how do we get from oil and timber rights to the essential annexing of an entire country as a protectorate? And for people listening, Mr. Chase's theory is that Canada has been, since 1945, politically and administratively. We're not just talking in theory here, but they have actually been a administrative protectorate of the United States. And isn't that basically an area of national land that's under the military administration of the country? Is that what is existing today in Canada?
Well, let me explain. Churchill delivered to Roosevelt a letter that would allow U.S. oil and timber interests to exploit certain portions of the Canadian resource table. And that letter never reached Roosevelt. Franklin Roosevelt died before he was able to read it. Now, Harry Truman, who succeeded Roosevelt as president, he reads what later became known as the Bruce Letter. It was named after Churchill's personal secretary at the time.
Can you give me the breakdowns, before we do any more history, How is it that Canada is a protectorate? That's all I want to know. Unbeknownst to the American or the Canadian people, how is it that America is running Canada as some kind of a military protectorate?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, you have a non-existent Canadian military. The Canadian military, which is called the Canadian Defense Forces, has essentially ceased being a world-recognized power because it was essentially dismantled by the United States in the 1950s. Today, Canada spends less than 3% of her GNP on military expenditure, not because they don't want to defend their country, but because they are already being defended by the United States. This has come about due to the acquiescence of post-war British authorities and Canadian authorities that act now more as a local administrative agency than as a national government.
But the Canadians have their own parliamentary system. They have their own governing body, correct?
Well, again, that is one of the beautiful aspects to all of this. The Canadian people are provided with the illusion of having a national identity so that they are not aware of the daily siphoning, really, of their resources by the United States.
Oh, come on. Now we're talking about America the war criminal.
Well, to be fair, the United States has, since the mid-1950s, accessed a great portion of Canada's resource. And to be fair, the reason why the United States offered annexation and the reason why it was accepted by Canada...
Was it accepted by Canada?
Yes, and...
Well, tell me about that.
Well, it's an interesting story. In the 1950s, the Prime Minister of Canada was a man by the name of Lester B. Pearson. His sister was married to a Washington diplomat by the name of John Foster Dulles. Now, Mr. Dulles would later become head of our CIA. Now, Pearson was an American fan. He loved America. He loved the country. And he saw Canada as a place where the American model could be applied. Now, John Foster Dulles enters the picture.
This is a lot of intrigue, isn't it?
Well, nothing gets done internationally without the acquiescence of a great many people more behind the scenes than in front of the scenes, Phil. And to tell this story, you have to go back to post-war Britain, United States, and Canada. Now, John Foster Dulles, again, was a diplomat. He offered Lester B. Pearson an interest in a South African diamond excavation enterprise that at that time was being undertaken by a young, energetic World War II veteran by the name of...
George Bush.
Exactly. George Herbert Walker Bush, Jr.
All right. Now, on that note, let me just give our phone number out. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Andrew Chase is my guest. The book is called... National Facade, Six Decades of American Territorial Deceit, where we have essentially annexed Canada, and we have administratively been in charge of Canada since World War II. All right, now, you're telling a story, and if I'm getting this right, that after World War II ended, the British wanted a free hand in Palestine. The United States, in allowing them a free hand in Palestine, wanted the wanted some mineral rights to Canada.
That is correct. They wanted oil resource, and they wanted timber rights.
Okay. They were given that, and so the United States had some resource rights in Canada. Then a Prime Minister of Canada, Mr. Pearson, who was married to the sister of John Foster Dulles, we are now at a point where he's entered into a...
Well, John Foster Dulles was not more than just a diplomat. He was the head of the CIA at the time. Okay.
All right, but he's offered an interest in... He's offered Lester Pearson, the Prime Minister of Canada, an interest in a South African diamond excavation...
enterprise. That's right. That's right.
All right. Now, we're at this point. This excavation is being run by George Bush, Sr.
That exactly. George Bush, as the result of this film. Pearson signed over to the American consul in Ottawa all resource rights to Canada. Now, if you read international law, it very clearly states that while individual leaders of certain territories cannot just unilaterally decide policy for their country without at least consulting an independent body, and in many cases they rubber stamp parliaments and this kind of thing, if we're in the terms of a dictatorial power, but in a democratic society, these things have to be ratified constitutionally. But they can sign resource rights over. So the problem is, when you sign over the resource rights to a country, you are signing over the country territorially.
So Lester Pearson, in signing over the resource rights of Canada, effectively gave Canada to the U.S.
To the United States, exactly. With the help of a young engineer named George Herbert Walker Bush. Now let's cut to September the 2nd, 2001. George Bush, Jr., receives a, the President of the United States at that time receives a coded communique from what is called the Home Office in Ottawa. It alerts him to what we now know was what is called a File 3, that is a transfer of documents pertaining to resources to the United Nations. In effect, this would be allowing the UN to look into the deal struck by Dulles and Pearson in 1955. Bush knows that will put his family, because remember, his father was the one who was excavating a diamond mine in South Africa. So that puts the Bush family squarely in the crosshairs of the most underhanded selling out of a national identity in the history of the world. He can't let that happen. So he places...
All right, now hold on. George Bush Jr. is now president. Somehow the United Nations is made aware of the fact that these documents pertaining to resource rights in Canada, and this is not good?
No, it's certainly not good. It's a violation of the UN Charter.
That a prime minister of one country would sign over resource rights to another?
Exactly. So he can't let this happen. So he places a call to a dear family friend named Abwar Saud Makit. He is a Saudi Arabian with contacts both in the government and among the certain titled upper classes of Saudi Arabia. We don't know the content of the call, but what we do know was that in 1998, at a conference of Arab League ministers, Makit was photographed eating or sitting at a table with a man by the name of Osama bin Laden.
So Bush called this guy, what you're telling me, to have him engineer 9/11.
Not only did George Bush call this guy to have him engineer 9/11, 2 days later, the 13th of September, a diplomatic pouch was couriered to Riyadh containing the two coded Swiss bank account numbers. A day later, we know through contacts in Lake Geneva that $150 million was withdrawn from an account opened in the name of Trinity Ratul. Trinity Ratul was the personal secretary of Barbara Bush during George Bush's days as head of the CIA.
So George Bush Jr. engineered 9/11 to cover up the fact that America had annexed Canada in the 1950s.
Not only did he cover it up, but there were mass graves in the Cold Lake region of northern Alberta between 1958 and 1969. Some 250,000 Canadians were systematically relocated or murdered by Canadian paramilitary...
You got to be kidding me.
No, just hear me out, Phil. That 250,000 Canadians were systematically relocated or murdered by Canadian paramilitary working at the behest of the United States, to wit, the CIA. So what you have...
You really got to be kidding me, man. That 9/11 was...
What you know, but what you have... So you can't just look at an apple and say, this is an apple. You have to say, well, there's seeds, and there is also the meat, and there could be a worm inside, and this kind of thing. So 250,000 Canadians lost their lives or relocated between 1950 and 1969 because they knew or had access to information that told the truth about America, annexing Canadian resource, liquidating Canadian national identity, effectively making Canada a client state without any real control of its own destiny. And with the transfer of the File 3 documents to the United Nations, Bush places a call. And
well, how much, you know, look, Bush, first of all, how do we know that Bush placed this phone call? Do you know?
We know because George Bush's own secretary, who at that time was a man by the name of Johnson, Vlad Johnson, said that Bush had been on the phone all morning long. It was long distance. It was to the Middle East.
How do you know it was to the Saudi Arabians?
We know because we have records of phone records stating that Mr. McKeith received a call from the United States somewhere in Saudi Arabia, about 12 hours ahead of Washington, somewhere around midnight on the morning of the 14th of September.
All right, where are you right now?
Where am I right now?
Yeah.
I'm in my backyard.
All right, Andrew Chase with us. 9/11 was engineered by George Bush to cover up the fact that the United States annexed Canada in 1955. Now, you heard the reasons that he gave, that Canada was effectively turned over to the United States for its resource rights following World War II by the British. Canada was a member of the British Commonwealth, and that the United States gave Britain a free hand in Palestine as a result. Lester Pearson then turned over resource rights to the United States in 1955, as a way of saying thank you to John Foster Dulles and a young American engineer by the name of George Bush, who were undertaking a South African diamond excavation. effectively giving us resource rights to Canada, according to United Nations Charter, would give us the rights to the entire country, so it became a protectorate, unbeknownst to the Canadian and American people in 1955, and that was going to be made public by the United Nations in early September of 2001, so Bush places a phone call to a man by the name of Abwar Saud Makif, who in 1998 was photographed at an Arab League ministers' meeting with Osama bin Laden. A week and a few days later, 9/11. Engineered to cover up that the UN had discovered America was effectively operating a protectorate state with Canada.
What?
Nothing.
Well, your silence...
Just never mind. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Stepping over the line. Naked. Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Andrew Chase joins us. The book that he has written, which is debuted on the New York Times bestseller list, National Facade, Six Decades of American Territorial Deceit, purports to present the case that the United States has essentially been the military administrator of Canada since 1945, that in point of fact, Canada is not a separate nation, but takes its administrative orders from the U.S., although there is an illusion, I guess, of a democracy up there. You also say that 250,000 Canadians have been systematically relocated or murdered by basically the CIA because they found out about this.
That is correct, yes. And let me add one more thing, Phil, that I think your audience would be very interested in. The United States has engineered chemically through Canadian National Health. They have done a program or started a program of sterilization of Canadian nationals. Now, the reason for this...
Oh, come on, Mr. J. Is any of this stuff backed up?
Hold on, because your audience is going to find this interesting. Look, everybody knows, Phil, that the Canadian...
No, this stuff, where are you backing this stuff up with, man? 9/11 was caused because Bush was afraid that people are going to find out that America runs Canada? I mean, 3,000 people?
Well, hold on. You're going to like this because everyone knows the Canadian National Health System is a failure. And
who even thinks about the Canadian National Health System? Who? I mean...
Well, the people that are in charge, the people... Look, I'm going to tell you something. The Canadian National Health System is such a failure because of the fact that the United States was testing the idea of socialized medicine. Now, they find out that it was not working because it is too expensive. Most Canadians cannot afford it. And in point of fact, do come to the United States to receive their health care. Now, the United States began in 1978. And this was with the full knowledge of Jimmy Carter, by the way. So this is not a partisan issue. We're not talking about Democrats versus Republicans here. The United States began a systematic process of sterilizing Canadian women, and it was begun at a clinic in Montreal by the name of Le Marchand Clinic. And this was started by a Dr. Le Marchand. Now, you'll be interested in this man's story. And
everything you're telling me, man, goes from, hey, now we're going to go here and there and everywhere else.
Well, it's a fascinating story and one that the American people need to hear because if they know the truth behind 9/11. And
I've heard every crackpot idea, Mr. Chase, and I don't mean to yell, behind 9/11. George Bush this, George Bush that. Now he wants to cover up that we annexed Canada. Next thing you know, you're going to be telling me that we've got some... I don't know. I mean, that the guy is... Maybe he's the actual king of England, for all I know.
Well, yeah, look, Phil, there's an old saying that we fear what we don't want to understand. And I'm trying to alert the American people. And I am a Canadian national. I live and I work in Toronto. I love this country. I really believe it to be a country.
Well, that's the other thing. You're a Canadian. So you got an axe to grind anyway, don't you?
Well, there's a lot of Canadians that do have an axe to grind.
Well, why is that?
Well, I mean, the United States engaged in an illegal war, criminal war, that was against the United Nations Charter. And
You know what? You know, I got to tell you something. As long as I got you on the line, as long as you're a Canadian, I don't think you guys understand even how the world works. I don't think you guys up north of the border get where water comes from.
Well, you know something? The insults, Phil, at the hands of America is something that we have suffered that for a long time.
Well, I don't mean to insult you, but what am I supposed to do? I'm going to sit here and hold on for a minute. David Hall, my program director. Yes, David?
You know something? When you're talking, let the guy explain himself, okay, Phil?
Go ahead, sir.
All right, thank you. Wherever you are, masked man. My name is David G. Hall. I'm the vice president of syndication. All right, thank you, Mr. Hall. I'm simply saying to you this, Phil. I don't want to get an argument, I'm telling you. George Bush and George Herbert Walker Bush, his father, these two men had a hand in the systematic murder and subsequent cover-up of 1,500 prostitutes in Las Vegas from the time...
Will you get out of here with this? Are you hearing what he's saying, David?
I think it's interesting. I want to hear it. Go ahead. It really is, Phil.
Now George Walker Bush and George Bush killed prostitutes.
1,500 prostitutes. Hear the story, though. Hear the story, Phil. They, both of these men, had a hand at a casino called La Boheme. Now, La Boheme went belly up within about 6 months. But the money that was used to seed La Boheme had come from Chicago from a guy by the name of Sam Giancana. Where have we heard that name before? The Kennedys. But the Bushes were involved in this. Now, that came from...
Are you listening to this?
Shut up! I want to hear it. Go ahead. The Bushes were involved in this. Now, George Bush was born with a very small male member. Nobody knows this. Now, this was the result of a lot of people...
Oh, my God.
Shut up! Anyway, this guy says to me...
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Communist influenced.
Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Let's go to the phones now. Hi, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, Mr. Hendry. I was wondering if you're aware that Jimmy Hoffa's disappearance was as the result of Martians that came...
All right, thank you very much. Just because I got the one guy on talking about how 9/11 happened because we didn't want anybody to find out Canada was the 51st state. Go ahead, Steve. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Mr. Hendry, are you aware that Marilyn Monroe was consumed by flesh-eating disease?
Is it conspiracy night now? Is this going to just keep on going? Am I going to get some phone calls? Lloyd, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I feel for you, Mr. Hendry. Enjoy your program very much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. There's a very interesting article about how dinosaurs were sucked up by a giant vacuum cleaner in the...
All right, let's not take any more phone calls. I'll give the number out, just in case there's anybody out there that's taken, you know, all of the prescribed medicines today, not just picking and choosing. You know, when the doctor says you have to take Effexor as well as Dexedrine, as well as, you know, your Xanax or whatever the hell there is, Zoloft, take them all, okay? Don't just pick and choose, all right? 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show. Here's a call from David Hall. David, are you listening to this stuff tonight?
Yeah, did you know that Natalie Wood could float? Because...
Moving along here, smoking keeps blood vessels... I don't... You know, what's the point? Conspiracies... The conspiracy... All I know is this, man, and I've said this before, and I don't think there's a coincidence at all. The conspiracy theory... gained new appreciation and more converts. And when I say conspiracy theories, I mean about everything and anything. Gained appreciation and converts just about the same time that widespread use of LSD took place in this country. Now, it ain't a coincidence. It ain't. Got to be something to it. There's got to be some connection between the fact that people are perfectly intelligent. And what do I mean perfectly intelligent people? I don't know they're perfectly intelligent. They may be brain dead from way back. But there's got to be a reason why so many people seemingly intelligent will accept any and all poo as fact, man. Holocaust didn't happen. Eric Von Doniger, Chariots of the Gods, Martians came down here, and Gene spliced us with horses. Dig that. That book, Chariots of the Gods, was written by a man by the name of Eric Von Doniggen, that there is a cadre of aging New Age hippies and crystal freaks who think is God Almighty, and they think this guy has got the serious, serious theory on how man emerged on this planet. Martians came down here, picked this up, probed this anally or whatever, and then decided to gene splice this with, like, I don't know, dogs or something, and out came people. In other words, when they found us, we were like just, what, chimps? And, you know, people, like, really, really go for this stuff. Well, 1973, what was going on then? You got it, Quaaludes. Downers, uppers, coke, pot, hash, mescaline, psilocybin tea, magic mushrooms, so on and so forth. The list goes on and on. This country, this society, had come just busted out of its cage, man, after that whole garrison society mentality, man, after World War II and Korea and wearing flat tops and drinking Pilsner beer out of a fluted glass. We decided to just, woo, man. I mean, we just started wearing our hair long and we just, it was a party, baby, and everything and anything was possible. Never mind that there, you know, reality still lurks out there. You can go out and you could party your ass off, man, but you still got to get up in the morning and start the car, right? Well, the same thing happens with people and societies and culture. And in the 1970s, when all of this conspiracy crap started to take hold, because Nixon and those guys couldn't tell the truth, then it turned out every president was a liar. Every president was a liar. Not just Nixon, everybody. They're all liars. Nixon's a liar, Ford was a liar, Carter was a liar, Clinton's a liar, Reagan's a liar, Bush is a liar. I'm telling you right now, man, I can track it back to my youth. I know exactly when it started. Because I came of age at a very pivotal time in this century. It was the time that bridges between two completely separate Americas. The trusting America of the 50s and the post-war era, and the new cynical and questioning America, which some people will tell you is very healthy, but not when you become psychotic about it, man. No, it's not healthy. Not when you start having flights of fancy. Questioning things is one thing, but actually asking me if the walls are breathing because you took a hit of purple microdot, that's just because you took some acid. Got nothing to do with whether or not the freaking walls are breathing. I got a great idea, man. Drink a bunch of Ripple wine and call me in about 12 hours. It is not a coincidence, and I'm telling you again, and if you think I'm kidding, I'm not. I am deadly serious when I say the current generation of boomers and some of their offspring, but really this has all been influenced by the boomers. They give a full voice to these conspiracy theories because of their habitual drug use. I ain't kidding you, man. I've been around them. Still smoking weed. Still doing a couple of lines now and again. And, you know, like, they ain't even on the planet freaking Earth. And they pass this whole questioning, and I don't mean just healthy questioning. I mean this whole very unhealthy, cynical skepticism onto their offspring so that even when a president's telling the truth, he's a liar. Just think about that. When has Bush or Clinton ever opened their mouths when anybody ever believed them? Clinton was a liar, too. Remember that? Oh, yeah, he was a liar. Bush is a liar. Bush Sr. was a liar. I can tell you the time, the place. I can tell you the dates. I can tell you who said it. I remember every freaking president, man, has been a liar. Carter was a lying sack of crap, too. Ford was a lying sack. As a matter of fact, Ford was the guy that pardoned Nixon, man, and everybody thought that that deal was struck way before Ford ever became president. So that was a conspiracy, too. How foolish do you want to feel, man? I can keep pointing this crap out. Well, you know what? Sooner or later, reality has a way of intruding, man. Seriously, sooner or later, reality has a way of raising its ugly kisser right up into your face and saying, hi, I'm here, and breathing its stench breath all over you. And it won't, I mean, all of the acid, all of the quaaludes in the world, man, all of the downers and uppers and antidepressants and stimulants will not keep you from staring reality in the face. And it will arrive. And I just hope it doesn't arrive this way. We'll be waiting for Uncle Sam to bail us out when the bad man is finally at the door. Not at the shore, but at the door. We'll be waiting for Uncle Sam to finally tell us it's all a big, bad dream. Maybe the president will be Kerry. And we elected him because we want him to, you know, we want America to be America again. Remember that one? So when the bad man finally arrives and sticks that sharpened saber, you know, right in your throat there, and you're waiting for Uncle Sam to call up and tell you that it's all a big bad dream, and guess what? He can't do it, man, because it ain't. What are we going to say then? Well, there ain't going to be much to say. It's goodbye, head. It's goodbye, head. Hello, Broadway. Give my regards to Broadway. It's a hell of a way to get ahead. Yeah, David?
Jesus.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Phil. This is Major Johnson Jameson.
Oh, God. Thankfully, a voice of reason. I hear you usually on the Art Bell Show.
I actually am, Phil, but I wanted to tell you that your listeners need to know that a meteor is going to hit the Earth.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. There, everybody's a freak. I like how these guys all know I'm going to hang up on them, so they spit it out real fast. A meteor's going to hit the Earth. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Our website is www.philhendryshow.com. Pick up a souvenir while you're there. All right, now the two finalists on American Idol are Fantasia Barrino and another gal by the name of Diana DiGiarmo, and they are right now battling it out. And
Fantasia won.
Well, why did you tell me that, bud? I wanted to see it on TV.
Well, I just got it on the news. She was matter.
I was just about to go into Mantuck. Let me see this. How do you know they won?
Here it is right here.
Seattle Times. Fantasia Barrino's fantasy of pop stardom became a reality Wednesday night when she was named the winner of American Idol. It ain't even over yet, man?
Well, it's over on the East Coast, you retard.
Don't call me a retard, okay? I understand about time change.
Well, Jesus, don't you know they tape it and then play it back later on the West Coast?
Yeah, I know that, man. I don't like being called a retard. Get out of here.
Tard.
Barrino, a 19-year-old from High Point, North Carolina, with a powerful gospel-tinged voice. In other words, she sounds exactly like Aretha Franklin. Top Diana DiGiarmo, an effervescent 16-year-old from Snellville, Georgia, and she sounds just like, Pink. I don't know. The judges had pretty much crowned Barrino the winner the previous night when she dazzled them with her powerful version of Gershwin's Summertime. Well, I got to tell you, both Mark and I have been listening to the performances. They both stink. I mean, they are bad. Oh, my God. How could they make such a horrific mistake? The voters were right, if indeed those were true voters. These two women, this is the biggest mistake that they've ever made. Simon Cowell should be gelded alive, tied to a post like a steer, and just be gelded like a horse. And Fat Boy there, what's that guy's name? Jackson? Randy Jackson? You ought to go back to parking cars. And as for you, Paul Abdul, why don't you come on over to my house? We'll talk about it. Fantasia Barrino. She's the winner of American Idol, and we just heard the songs they did, and they're horrific. Now, yeah, because they get some really talented people up there. How could they blow it? How could this happen? We have to look into it. I'll bet you it's a conspiracy. And now they got a new one. By the way, American Idol, folks, is a talent show, as you know. I mean, if you just want to boil it down, it's a talent show, right? I mean, but this thing has become more than that. You win a talent show, you're an automatic superstar. I mean, that is the goal of this show, that whoever wins becomes a bona fide star. Every bit as much a star as any so-called legitimate Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera type star, right? I mean, maybe even as big as Rick Astley. Okay? So, to that end, they build it up to the point where these people that win these competitions, man, they think they really believe they're stars. All they are contest winners. That's what they are. They're contest winners. But America, somehow we get the impression that America embraces them as big stars. Now, I've gone to the websites of some of the people that have won American Idol competitions. They have their own websites. Have you seen some of the dates these cats play? I mean, when they're doing a tour? The Busted Whistle State Farm, I mean, they're seriously, the Atascadero Mental Outpatients Picnic, Have you been to these websites? You look at some of the dates that these guys are playing when they go on tour, and it ain't what I call, they ain't playing the, you know, Madison Square Garden, baby. They're playing the Upstate Cherry Festival. They're opening for the puppet show at Magic Mountain like Spinal Tap. Puppet show. I tell him not to put Spinal Tap above puppet show. No, I have puppet show above Spinal Tap. That's right. Well, I'm sure that's going to just hold the crowds back. They're playing the puppet show in between Spinal Tap and, you know, over there at Magic Mountain. Now, who were the first people that won American Idol? Can anybody guess? I remember Kelly Clarkson, and then came Fatboy.
Ruben,
and now...
Now Fantasia.
Now, are those the only three? Okay, one white, two black. Something's seriously wrong. And Deanna looks very upset. She's 16, going on 30. She's wearing a very nice cocktail dress. And I'm sure that this is the dream of many young people, to get out there and sing and be ripped off by a manager. I don't want to be cynical or anything, but hey, you know what? I'm bitter because I don't get to do that. I'm going to enter American Idol. Why not? I got a great voice, sort of. Well, I'm better than William Hung. I mean, if that guy got it, that dude is playing the freaking Madison Square. He's playing those, Warrior games. He got over that really quick, didn't he, that William Hung kid? This kid on American Idol was considered to, you know, obviously be a joke. People were laughing at him. And they interviewed him right after that, and he was very depressed. He was saying, sometimes I wish I'd never gotten out of bed that morning. I mean, there was really almost suicidal tones to this guy's voice, right? Somebody came along and dangled a few thousand bucks in front of his kisser, and all of a sudden, it ain't such a bad thing to look like a geek. To look like some freak with fetal alcohol syndrome out there singing, you know, she bang. Anyway, that's the winner. Thanks a lot, bud. I wanted to watch the end of it.
Well, I told you about it. That's why I said I didn't know that.
I didn't know that you were going to come in and tell me right in the middle while I'm watching it.
I'm just doing what I'm told.
You jackball. Thousands of people were expected at viewing parties at the Greensboro Coliseum near the 19-year-old Barino's hometown of High Point, North Carolina, and at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta. You know what this is? This is the Little League World Series. This is the new Little League World Series. Everything that high school football could be and never was is American Idol. Now, here's the thing about talent shows. Everybody's been to a talent show. Do you remember the talent shows we had in high school? And the fact that this televised talent show began with something called Ted Mack's Original Amateur Hour is really a mind blower, because when I was a kid, there was a show on Sunday afternoons at 4:30, and it had a guy on there who looked like an Allstate insurance executive named Ted Mack. All right, let's take your votes. And you voted over the phone. There was no studio audience. And he'd bring on, now let's bring on Susie Smartin and her sister Pinky, and they're going to sing a wonderful tune called Death Walks Behind You, originally written by Atomic Rooster. Come on in. You know, and the girls would, nee. And then, all right, everybody, let's do it. And, you know, you call in, and here he is, and then he'd have some kind of a meter at the end, and he had all kinds of guys, man. He had freak show, you know, guys, you know, the singing parrots, the whole thing. Mostly with singers. By God, the day, you know, it was a big show every Sunday afternoon. Then the whole talent show thing got lame and went away because people were strictly into professionals. That's all they wanted to see. Then in the early 80s, along came Ed McMahon, and he had Star Search. Remember that? And poor Ed got skewered in the shorts on this one because this is his, basically, that sort of glittery, Vegas-y presentation of the talent show that Star Search was. That's what we're looking at, is the evolution of that with American Idol. And where's Ed McMahon? He's lying under a bridge someplace with an empty bottle of Colt. And there's Ryan Seacrest, just, hi, Ryan Seacrest, even though my show got canceled. I'm just kidding, Ryan, you're a good man. Good guy. But there's Ryan living large, right? He got his, you know, the talk show got canceled. That sucks. I think the cat needs to know, and it would be the same. Anybody could host that show. Don't you think anybody could host that show? I mean, I don't mean any disrespect, but it's not like they're watching it to see him, man. I mean, you see what I'm saying? Don't people understand that at the network level? Well. Anyway, Diana, or Fantasia, excuse me, what's her name, Futurama? I don't know what the hell her name is, man. Somebody named her after a movie. Why did they call her Dumbo? Look, if Carson Daly can do it, I guess you're right. Yeah, Ryan, you're a more talented guy than Carson Daly. That's for bloody well sure. No, seriously, Fantasia, why don't they just call her, what's that one? Spencer's Mountain? I mean, you want to name her after a movie. A Disney movie. And now Spencer's Mountain Jones. I'm sorry. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
1-800-449-8686. The world famous Phil Henry Show.